This is Digital Story Podcast number 703, September 3rd, 2019. Today's theme is fast glass, classic lighting, and more. I'm Derek Story. How often can you say that you scored a true bargain on a brand new piece of photo equipment? Well, I did, with the Camlin 50mm f1.1 lens, and I'm going to tell you why today. Plus, I spent some time on Sunday studying portraits by painter Peter Paul Rubens, and as a result, I have a few insights to share. All of this and more on today's TDS Photography Podcast. Well, I say that the Camlin 50mm f1.1 for mirrorless cameras is a true bargain because I got it for $199 on Kickstarter, and that included an ND4 filter, metal lens hood, front and back caps, and it is truly a bargain. Now, you may go, well, Derek, Kickstarter's probably over. Where does that leave me? Well, that leaves you at the horrible price of $249 for the very same lens, which is not bad at all. And $249 for, I think, any good lens that we can use and enjoy and make great images with is a good value. But I'm talking about a lens that has a maximum aperture of f1.1 that is a very handsome lens. It looks great. It's well designed. It's got that metal body, smooth focusing heft of a quality optic. And on top of that, this is the Mark II, and so it is improved version over what they released the first time. And you know, I want to make a quick note on that. If after listening to me, or if you've read the review that I posted on Digital Story, I believe on Sunday, and you go, this is a lens that I'm interested in, and you have to shoot either Micro Four Thirds, Sony E, Fuji XF, or Canon EOS M mounts. It comes in all of those, all right? You can get a version of all those. But the thing to look out for is that you want to make sure that you get the Mark II, which is now just coming into the online marketplaces. Because the Kickstarter just finished, you know, we just got our optics and, you know, now broader distribution. There are a lot of the 50mm f1.1 Mark I's out there right now, and they're typically priced about $169, $179. The optics on those lenses are not nearly as good as the one on the Mark II. Camlin made some really notable improvements with the Mark II. So don't get lured into getting the Mark I by accident because you think, oh man, I'm getting this cheaper than Derek did. I'm getting it for $169. Yeah, you're getting the Mark I for $169, not the Mark II. So you really need to hold out for the Mark II. It's starting to show up. It's on Amazon right now for Sony cameras. I have that link in the show notes, and I'm starting to see it some other places. Depending on what mount you have, you should be able to find it fairly easily. Okay, all of that said, why am I interested in this thing? Well, because it is a very good lens. I have to tell you, I have been shooting with it a lot. It has good center sharpness at f1.1. Now, it is not like Zeiss center sharpness at f1.1, but it is very good. I mean, I'm putting it on my MacBook Pro, I'm zooming in and I'm looking at detail and I'm going, yeah, I'm okay with that. You know, the edge sharpness really firms up by f2.8. One of the fun things about this lens is, though, that it throws everything that's out of focus, really out of focus, nice and smooth, and things go out of focus with it quickly. And so I'm not really caring that much about edge sharpness when I'm shooting f1.1 because I actually want that softer background. I want, you know, that dreamy look. And boy, do you get it at f1.1 and f1.2 and 1.4. So it is just a truly fun lens to shoot with. Now, if you do want sharpness across the board, I would stop down to about F4. And again, I did all my testing on Micro Four Thirds. I don't think I need to stop down any further than F4 unless I have some light reason to do so. Now, I do recommend having an ND filter. It's a 62 millimeter thread. I do recommend having an ND filter with this lens so that you can keep the aperture as wide as possible. You really want to be shooting around 1.1, 1.2, maybe 1.4. Not much more than that. Otherwise, why not use, you know, one of your other lenses that does other lens things, right? A couple things to note before I get into the five things I learned shooting with it. It has 11 aperture blades, 11 aperture blades. And as you turn the aperture ring, which is clickless, by the way, so it's just it makes almost a perfect circle with the aperture blades. It's really beautiful and fun to watch. And because you've got that huge hunk of glass on the front, you know, you can really see what's going on. 8 elements in 7 groups. It weighs about 600 grams. And this is the one thing to make note of. If you are a super nimble photographer all of the time, 600 grams is a fair amount of heft. Now, it's not a very long lens. And because it has such a big front piece of glass, because it's not that long, it looks really good on the OMD EM5 Mark II, on the EM1 Mark II. Fantastic look on those cameras. In fact, the camera that I tested it on initially was the EM5 Mark II, and those are the pictures that I showed in the article in the Digital Story. And a lot of people commented that, you know, that combination looks fantastic, and I agree with them. Now, I'm shooting with it more on a Pen F, just because I like the Pen F so much, and is not quite as well balanced on the Pen F as it is on the EM5 or the EM1. However, I noticed that after moving from the EM5, now, you know, I'm not really thinking about that much, but it is something to note if you like a super balanced lens camera body situation. The 600 grams will pull it forward just a bit on the Pen F, and definitely on the OM10 as well. So keep that in mind. That 600 grams, by the way, feels good. It's a confidence building 600 grams. It's not like I'm just carrying this extra weight around. It is that all metal construction, those very smooth turning focus ring and aperture rings, all that. It is a quality 600 grams. So, you know, that's kind of the backdrop for this thing. Now, one of the questions that I got on Facebook is, well, how do you compare it to the Olympus 45mm f1.2 Pro lens? Well, they are really two different animals. The Pro lens, first of all, has autofocus. Not only does it have autofocus, it has great autofocus, right? So when you need autofocusing and when you need fantastic autofocusing, no comparison. You're not going to be able to manually focus with the Camlin, which you have to do. There's no autofocus. You're not going to be able to manually focus with the Camlin the way that you can autofocus with the Pro lens. So right there, boom, big difference. Second big difference is that the lenses are just designed differently. The thing that I like about the Olympus 45mm f1.2 is that it has enough depth of field for my professional portrait work in that I can focus on one eye and it will cover the nose and the other eye in focus, and then it starts to fall off. And I really like that. And when you're doing portrait work for hire in particular, it's nice, you know, then as the depth of field starts to fall off, you know, back by the ears and the hair and so forth, then that's great. But you can really count on having both eyes in focus with the Olympus 45mm f1.2. With the Camlin, the other eye is probably going to be out of focus unless they are on the same focusing plane. So it falls off that quickly when you're shooting an f1.1. So either you have to stop down a bit with the Camlin, which you don't have to stop down with the Olympus Pro, the f1.2, You can shoot wide open f1.2 and you get both eyes and then the fall off. The Camlin's going to fall off faster. And I think that's a big difference in addition to the autofocus. So when Olympus says that that 45mm f1.2 is a pro lens, they're very right about that in the sense that you deliver pro jobs with a lens like that. And then, of course, you know, the optical quality of the lens is, you know, through the roof. The Camlin, to me, is an art lens. It is a lens that you play with not so much for professional work, but for when you really want to experiment with different looks and when you want to create, you know, a different kind of vibe with your images and you're willing to sort of see what happens. You know, you get involved in the creative process with the Camlin a little differently than delivering professional results with the Olympus. And that is the big difference that I would say between the two lenses. And I would actually put the Olympus 45mm f1.8 in the same category as the Olympus 1.2. Obviously, it's not as fast, and the optical quality is still a little different with it as with the other Olympus. But both of them are for what I call, you know, really dependable results. And the Camlin is more for creative results, and they truly are paintbrushes. And, you know, and you start to say, well, look, you got a 45mm f1.8, a 45mm f1.2, and a 50mm 1.1. You really only need one of those lenses. And technically, you're right. You only need one of those lenses. The thing is that if you have access to all three of those lenses or two of the three lenses, you will use them differently once you really get to know them, and you will create different images with them. So, yes, it is a luxury, absolutely. But at $249, adding the Camlin to your luxury base, that is affordable luxury, right? That is affordable luxury. All right, so anyway, that's enough background. That should hold you. And you can read the review and look at the pictures that's on Digital Story right now. Here are a few things that I have learned shooting with it. And the first one is that you don't always need autofocus. And actually, I've really enjoyed shooting manual focus with this lens. Now, remember, I'm a guy that shoots film, and I shoot with a lot of manual focus lenses, so I'm used to it, okay? It's not like I go from autofocus all the time, and suddenly this is my only manual focus lens. I shoot manual focus a lot, but I have enjoyed manually focusing with this Camlin a lot, and it hasn't been a problem. I'm in a different space when I'm shooting with it, more of a fun, creative space. You don't always need autofocus. Unless, you know, you're a sports photographer or something like that, then you probably always do. But if you're shooting a wide variety of things and some of them are creative, you don't always need autofocus. Second thing, lens hoods should be included. For Pete's sakes, I am so tired of lenses that don't include lens hoods. Now, we're seeing this less now than we did a few years ago. This Camlin includes a metal lens hood that I just love. First of all, it's handsome as heck, okay? Second, the way that it screws in is that they put threads on the outside ring of the lens, and those are like 72mm threads, and so the lens hood screws into those, and it leaves the inside rings that are 62mm, the inside threads, open for filters. So the screw-in lens hood and screw-in filters actually go in different places, and that's really nice. So you don't have to take off the lens hood to change the filter and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's so clever. And then the other thing that it does that I just absolutely almost require these days is that the lens hood reverses back over the body so that when I'm not using it and I'm storing it, it's not a very long lens to begin with. It doesn't add any additional length for storage, or I don't have this extra thing banging around. It screws back and covers the body. It protects it. I don't know. It's just cool. Third thing, I am a sucker for big honking polished optics. And I could tell you, I could look at the front of this lens, you know, that 62mm objective polished piece of glass in the front of this lens. I could look at it all day. It is just so beautiful. And I have some really great lenses that have, you know, little openings. My Panasonic 20mm f1.7 doesn't have a very big objective glass. My 45mm f2.8 Zeiss Tessar that I just love for my film work has, you know, a little piece of glass in front. I'm fine. I'm not against them. It's just that when I have a big old honkin' beautiful objective piece of glass in the front, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. I like looking at it. And I have similar feelings about my Olympus 75mm f1.8, which is another amazing lens. And, you know, it and the 50mm Camlin really go nicely together. You know, you had me at the objective lens, right? All right, number four. On Olympus, that 2x doubler really helps for focusing. So unfortunately, I could not figure out how to get any of the functions for manual focus assist to work. I couldn't get the, you know, automatically, you know, magnifies when you turn the lens. And that's because the Camlin, it doesn't have any electrical contacts, you know, so the Olympus just, you know, it just says, I don't know what attached to me. You put some heavy thing on the front of me and that's all I know. I don't know when you're manually focusing. I don't know the XF data. I don't know anything, right? So I didn't really have a way to have focusing assist for manually focusing. And the electronic viewfinders are good for manually focusing, but they're not quite as good as like my classic, like my Nikon FA 35mm SLR. Now that is a screen that is great for manually focusing. You know, the electronic viewfinder is just not as good. However, I did notice a difference that when I switched from the EM 5 Mark II, which is an older camera, to the Pen F, which is a newer camera, that it was easier for me to focus with the Camlin on the Pen F. So as electronic viewfinders continue to get better, then, you know, this is better too. However, my trick was, and I said, well, will this work? I don't know. Let me try it. So I tried it. I like the 2X, you know, digital teleconverter, what they call it. And, you know, when you're shooting RAW plus JPEG, if you go to the 2X digital teleconverter, then the JPEG will have 2X magnification. So you go from, you know, whatever, 50 millimeters to 100 millimeters, you know, that kind of thing. So I have it on a function button. And so what I was doing with the Camlin is that I would line up the shot and then I would hit the function button, zoom in 2x, do my fine focusing and hit the function button again to zoom back out and then take the shot. And then I tested it by looking at the images on the computer magnified, and it seemed to have worked very well because those center focusing on those images were very sharp. So that's a nice little tip if you use either the Camlin or any lens that doesn't communicate with the camera. And finally, number five, lens info setting on Olympus cameras and other cameras that have them is a beautiful thing. Again, this is a dumb lens in the sense of having no computer contacts to talk to the camera body. So the camera has no idea what sort of lens XF there is. So I really don't like looking at XF data for pictures that has only the camera and not the lens. It just bothers me over time. So using the lens info setting allows me to apply a lens data profile to the Camlin. So I can say now what shows up in the XF, thanks to having this ability, you know, I have it, you know, the Camlin 50 millimeter Mark II for the name, maximum aperture f1.1. You know, I have that information there. So then that way, when I look at the XF data, then I know what lens was on there. And that really helps me a lot. I think that's really important. So that is a beautiful thing. By the way, I'm up to 9 profiles now on my lens info setting for the Pen F. So I have 9 dumb lenses that are optically beautiful that I'm using with that camera. And it's really enhanced my photography a lot. Those are the 5 things that I've learned just in the last week or so shooting with this lens. I have captured many images with this, and I have to say that I like the pictures. They're sharp when I need them to be sharp, and they're dreamy where I don't need them to be sharp. And you know, that's just a wonderful combination. And I think all the mirrorless shooters, whether you're Fuji or Canon crop sensor or Sony or Micro Four Thirds, I think all of you would enjoy this optic. But I think in particular, Micro Four Thirds shooters, this is a real delight that's waiting for you. If you're interested in this sort of lens, I would definitely give it a look. I just think it's fantastic. Do you have a film camera that needs a good home? If you do, I have one for you. I've received many donations from our virtual camera club members, and you know, they're saying, look, this is something that I can do to help support the community. I have this camera, this film camera SLR, sitting in my closet. I'm not doing anything with it. I would love to have somebody shoot with it and use it, and at the same time help support what you're doing. Can I send it to you? And in those cases, they contact me via the contact form at thenimblephotographer.com. They let me know what they have, and then, you know, we arrange the handoff. I then take those cameras, lenses, whatever, you know, we're talking about. I run them through my shop, get them all cleaned up, test them, do any minor repairs that may need to happen. And then I put them in the film camera shop, and they are up for sale for people that love shooting analog. And most of those, especially this time of year, are students that are taking college classes at JC or universities in film photography, and they need to get their hands on a good camera. And I can send them a reliable one that's been tested. Your camera then gets put to good use. So if you're interested in this sort of thing, like I said, it's a great way to help support the podcast and everything that we're doing. Just use the contact form at thenimblephotographer.com and let me know what you're thinking. The lighting of Peter Paul Rubens. This was very interesting. So Sunday, I went to the Legion of Honor Museum in San Francisco. It is just a beautiful place to go. It is up high in Golden Gate Park, and certain areas you can see the Golden Gate. You can see the Golden Gate Bridge even. You can see across the way to Sausalito and all that kind of stuff. Just a beautiful setting. And they had a special exhibit going on of Peter Paul Rubens. And Rubens was a Flemish painter from the early 1600s when he did a lot of his work. He became world famous through publishing books with his work in them, and known for his excellent lighting, his sort of stylistic poses, his Rubenesque women, often quite voluptuous. And I wanted to see his stuff up close and personal. I have seen some of his canvases and wood boards before, but never a whole exhibit dedicated to him. So I go out there and I'm checking it out. And I have one of the images from the show that I'm going to put in the show notes. And I think you should take a look at it. It is the portrait of Paracelsus, and it's from 1615. That portrait in particular, because it was a portrait with an isolated subject with a background, really allowed me to study his lighting easier in that shot than some of the more complex canvases that he did, where he had, you know, so many people, and the lighting was, you know, just very intricate. I could really just sort of study, you know, one person, one light sort of thing. I thought it was really helpful, and I think you might want to take a look at it too. So let me tell you a little bit about this portrait. The light is coming down from an angle on the left side, but the face is turned slightly to the right. So more the left side, which is where the light is coming down at an angle, like let's say the sun at 10 in the morning kind of thing. So it's coming down from that side, so it's exposing more of the left side. The eyes aren't straight ahead, so even though the face is angled, they're looking back to the left as well, which isn't a lighting thing, but I thought it was an interesting composition thing. So you had the head kind of turned slightly to the right with the eyes looking back to the left and with more of the left face exposed. Now there is some shadow from the nose on the right side, as well as shadow on the neck and the right side of the face, but it isn't too harsh. And the effect is like what we would get from using a white reflector for the fill. You know, you start to really study this painting and you go, that, you know, that's really interesting. So the angle of the main light and then how it plays out on the face, and then how just a little bit of fill, you know, kind of fills in the offside, the way the head is turned, and then the way the eyes are looking off in one direction. And the overall effect was really quite pleasing. And I think one of the interesting things for me to study painters, and the Flemish painters are fascinating to study this way, how they handle light. It's not an actual photograph, so the light might not be, you know, 100% accurate, though, boy, with the Flemish painters, it's very darn close. But somehow I can really absorb the lighting study from a painting sometimes easier than I can a photograph. And maybe that's because, you know, the tones are a bit easier to differentiate in a painting than a photo sometimes. So I think this is a lighting style definitely worth taking a look at. I think it's particularly good for portraits of men, boys, and girls. There are probably going to be a little bit too much texture in this lighting style for women that are older. Probably stay away from it from them and use something more coming from the front. But you never know. I mean, it depends on the effect that you want. So take a look at the sample that I have. And then I also have a link to the Wikipedia page for Peter Paul Rubens, where there's a lot of his work there. And if you're interested in this, you might want to look at some of his other paintings and study a bit about him. I think it's fascinating to study painters in terms of lighting and composition. I feel like it helps my photography a lot. Take a peek and see what you think. B&H Deal of the Week, the Olympus TG6. That's the new one, for $50 off. Okay, so if you have an outdoor adventure in the works, you may want to bring along the Olympus Tough TG6 because it's just perfect for that kind of photography. It's waterproof rated to IPX8, so that's depths of 50 feet or 15 meters. Freeze proof to temperatures as low as 14 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 10 Celsius. Shock proof to falls from 7 feet. Crush proof to withstand up to 220 pounds of pressure. And dust proof rated to IP6X to protect the internal components of the camera. All of that good stuff, plus great image quality. All sorts of cool functions. Olympus is great at giving you cool functions. Built-in GPS, built-in Wi-Fi. I mean, this is just a great travel camera. You can get it right now with the link that I have in the show notes for $399. That's $50 off. That's a great deal for this latest Olympus TG6 tough camera. If you got an adventure coming up, you might want to be packing one of these with you. I just posted a new Nimble podcast, musician Monique DeBose, and this woman, I tell you, is a delight. Again, this is my journey as a Nimble photographer to seek out artists who talk about their views on success, the arc of their career, how they overcome failure, all that good stuff, hoping to learn from their perspectives and apply it to my world of photography and writing and your world as well. And so this conversation with Monique just fits in so well with this theme. She's an award-winning playwright, a jazz, R&B, pop singer, songwriter. She's done a lot of touring. She was on tour, actually, in Europe when I interviewed her. Her third album, The Sovereign One, it debuted at number 2 on the iTunes jazz charts. Very easy on the ears and quite delightful to listen to, and the lyrics are fantastic. She is a fascinating person, and she has learned a lot during the course of her career as an artist, and she freely shares her insights, her lessons, you know, all this good stuff. If you enjoy listening to other artists talk about their perspective on these sort of things, you've got to tune in. The podcast is available at thenimblephotographer.com. Just click on the podcast link. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Overcast, Stitcher, you name it. You can get it at all those places. Tune in and listen to what Monique DeBose has to say. I think you will enjoy that half an hour. All right, just a little bit of virtual camera club news. First of all, big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the people that allow all of this good stuff to happen. They keep the podcasts flowing. They help me develop new podcasts. They help with the workshops. Their contributions, their support is the bedrock of our virtual camera club. Thank you to all of our Inner Circle members. If you want to see what's going on with the Inner Circle, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go check it out, and if you like what you see, become a supporter yourself. We have tiles for B&H and Amazon and all the pages of the Digital Story. If you're going to buy something, this, you know, that I talked about the TG6 on B&H. Now, I have a link that takes you right to that deal in the show notes. But if you're thinking about something else at B&H, click on the B&H tile that's on all the pages or the Amazon tiles, all the pages. Then navigate to whatever it is you're looking for. That helps support the site. Thank you for making that extra step. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. They are the ones that supply all of my printing paper for all of my projects, whether it's fine art prints or classic greeting cards. You know, we're coming in sooner than you think to the time of year where you're going to want to have some fine art cards stashed away. That's right, because they make a great gift that people truly enjoy. You can get all the supplies at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of Digital Story. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Everything that you need, from printing ink to paper to envelopes, they have it. They have tutorials. They have reviews. That is the printing watering hole for those of us who love to make art that we can put in other people's hands. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I'm working on some cool stuff, some more reviews. Lots going on. Make sure you come back and join me next Tuesday. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.